Today on Vox Talks Economics, how will Ukraine's economy survive the war? Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics, so remember to subscribe and follow us on Instagram as well. In the last few weeks, we have focused on the impact of conflict in Ukraine on Russia's economy. But how is the Ukrainian economy holding up? A recent Vox column written by Yevhemy Skok and Oliver de Groot of the University of Liverpool examines whether emergency policy has been able to maintain liquidity and financial stability. Yevhemy, who is formerly of the National Bank of Ukraine as well, joins me now. Welcome to Vox Talks Economics.
Hello, Tim. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Tell me, Yevhemy, first of all, what is your personal connection with Ukraine?
I'm Ukrainian. I have been born, grown up and educated in Ukraine. And eventually I had been working almost for a decade in various positions at the National Bank of Ukraine, mainly in the Department of Monetary Policy.
Do you have family still in Ukraine?
I was lucky because my family was able to join me, but my parents and my friends and relatives still remain in Ukraine.
I hope for the best for them. My best wishes to you on that.
Thank you.
Let's talk about Ukraine's economy. First of all, let's go back a few years, because in the first couple of decades of the independence from the Soviet Union, then I believe the currency was very unstable, wasn't it? Does that affect the attitude of Ukrainian people to things like money and inflation?
Since its independence in 1991, Ukraine has experienced quite a turbulent monetary history. In 1993, hyperinflation peaked about 10,000%.
Whoa.
Yeah, and it's triggered the need for monetary reform and a transition to a new currency in 1996. Then Ukraine experienced three large devaluations, and these devaluations were accompanied by spikes in inflation. And it's definitely changed the attitude of Ukrainians to money and inflation. As a consequence, I would say that Ukrainian households have become more sensitive to changes in the exchange rate and hold large quantities of foreign currency to protect their money from the depreciation. If we take a look on deposits, for instance, as of February, about 30% of all household deposits were in US dollars.
Whoa.
And 7% in euros, despite a large interest rate differentials between deposits in national and foreign currencies for households. And this differential was about 6.5% in January. And moreover, households are quick to convert their liquid savings out of national currency in response to signs of economic, financial, or political instability in the country. For this reason, we observed an increase in demand for foreign currencies in crisis times in the past.
There has been some normalization, hasn't there? After the last devaluation, that was 2015, the central bank became operationally independent. Did that work to improve stability?
So let me firstly address the first part of the question related to the operational independence of the Ukrainian central bank, and then I will turn to the stability issue. And let me be very precise about operational independence, because I would say that the National Bank of Ukraine became operationally independent in 1999, when Ukrainian parliament adopted the law on the National Bank of Ukraine. When the National Bank of Ukraine was actually approved as a special state body that operates within its own budget. And the government bonds in a central bank portfolio provide me a more practical benchmark in terms of the operational independence. On the eve of the global financial crisis, the NBU actually didn't hold government bonds in its portfolio. The National Bank of Ukraine started to buy bonds in commercial banks only since the crisis. And there was a notable growth of the NBU government bonds in its portfolio within a few years before, 2015. But what is specifically important about 2015 is that the National Bank of Ukraine started actively communicated about the transition to inflation targeting regime, which was adopted at the end of 2015, beginning of 2016. In fact, the National Bank of Ukraine has a mandate to ensure price and financial stability and also support economic growth if it's not contradict price and financial stability. To achieve former, the National Bank of Ukraine target 5% annual inflation. And now let me turn to stability issue. If we take a look at recent years, the National Bank of Ukraine achieved its goals in 2019 and 2020, when inflation was around 4 and 5%. By 2021, the National Bank of Ukraine was the image of a typical modern central bank in the middle of a steady policy tightening cycle. Actually, it was balancing between the need to support the economy during the COVID pandemic crisis and preventing inflationary pressures arising from higher global prices.
But then, of course, towards the end of 2021, the global community started to really notice that buildup of Russian troops on the border of Ukraine and started to speculate that, well, what's happening now would happen. How did external investors react to this buildup of troops?
Since November last year, when satellite imagery of new Russian troops near the border emerged, financial pressures on Ukraine were building with every escalation of geopolitical tensions. The first sign of this pressure was turbulence in the foreign exchange market and a slide in the value of the hryvnia, Ukrainian national currency. External investors basically began to withdraw their investments, which was especially notable at the beginning of this year. For instance, the volume of Ukrainian government bonds held by non-residents shrank by almost 20% in January-February. If we look at the balance of payments, the financial account net outflow amounted to $2.4 billion. For comparison, this figure was 6 times lower a year ago in January. And this outflow was mainly generated by the private sector.
Then, of course, the invasion began. And in amongst all of the news of that, one thing that we didn't hear very much about was the actions that the Central Bank of Ukraine had to take. What did they do at this time?
First of all, I should say that Russian invasion of Ukraine has dramatically changed the monetary landscape in the country forced ZNBU immediately change its operations to prevent a financial crisis. And on the 23rd of February, on the eve of war and with the currency sliding again, the ZNBU attempt to calm the market by stating that it has sufficient amount of international reserves and there is no shortage of foreign currency in the banking sector. But the next day with the invasion, on the 24th of February, they immediately closed the foreign exchange market and switched from a flexible to a fixed exchange rate regime. Exchange rate was fixed at 29 hryvnias per $1 and still remain fixed today. Only operations of customers who sold foreign currency were allowed. On the same day, to help build up international reserves and the capacity to ensure financial stability in the country, the Central Bank of Poland granted about $1 billion to Ukraine within a swap line with the National Bank of Ukraine. The National Bank of Ukraine also supported the government and banks with the liquidity. On the 25th of February, the NBU provided the banking system with access to unlimited refinancing loans in national currency with a maturity up to 1 year. This was an unprecedented step since these loans were completely unsecured. And over 11 days through these two banks took more money than they had on their current accounts with the NBU before the invasion. So, to sum up, the NBU, in fact, eliminated uncertainty about the exchange rate by fixing it and supported banks and the government with the liquidity. And these actions, in the space of 2 days, most likely prevented a sharp depreciation of the currency, a rapid outflow of international reserves, and a liquidity crisis.
Yes, tell me more about how the banks held up, because of course there are millions of Ukrainians are now displaced, and one of the things that they would want is access to their accounts. They would need currency. Was the banking sector resilient?
I should mention that the National Bank of Ukraine restricted withdrawal of cash and national currency in the amount of 1,000 hryvnias per day. That is equivalent of about $3,000 per day, and it was done to avoid a bank run. Meanwhile, the National Bank of Ukraine readily provided national currency and cash without limits. Another issue is that the immediate demand on the cash prompted scenes of long queues at ATMs. The access of people to cash was uneven across the country. Some places were in complete isolation without electricity, gas, and water, while in other regions the situation was much better. In the middle of March, in the regions with the most active hostilities, less than 15% of branches of large banks operated, and it was extremely hard to deliver cash there. In contrast, more than 90% of large bank branches operated in central and western Ukraine. So now you see this difference where less than 15% and more than 90%. Meanwhile, commercial banks have significantly reduced fees for their service overall. And on top of that, local stores, pharmacies, and gas stations quickly began to dispense cash to customers, thus acting as ATMs. That was unprecedented.
You note also in the article that the IMF has stepped in with emergency assistance. This sort of assistance usually comes with strings attached. Do we have any idea of the sort of conditionality that is attached to this?
Actually, we don't know much about this. We know that this funding is delivered via rapid financing instrument, and we are talking about $1.4 billion, which is 50% of the Ukrainian quota in the IMF. And the rapid financing instrument is an IMF tool aimed to provide rapid financing assistance to countries to meet a wide range of urgent needs, including those that arising from conflict and post-conflict situations, and there is no need for a full program in place. In fact, this tool is designed for a situation where an economic program is not necessary or not feasible. Therefore, there shouldn't be many conditions attached to this funding. Unlike the standby arrangement that Ukraine operated under before the invasion, which was recently cancelled in the face of emergency measures.
It's clear that even if this war ended tomorrow, there has been enormous damage to the productive capacity of the Ukrainian economy, and there is only so much that any type of policy can do in that situation. What is it about that that you fear most?
I think that one of the worst scenarios is a deep economic recession with a high inflation that could be really protracted amid limited capacity to rebuild the economy and facilitate economic growth. I see at least two reasons for the limited ability to support the economy. First, potentially there will be a decline in state budgetary revenues caused by severe economic disruptions and the already announced tax cuts. Secondly, additional liquidity in the economy may put further pressure on the national currency. Ukraine is highly reliant on imports, and excess liquidity is likely to end up in the foreign exchange market, putting more pressure on the national currency. And of course, any devaluation of the currency is then likely to transmit into inflationary pressures, first through prices of fuel and other imported goods, and then into the prices of local goods because of higher intermediate goods prices. On the top of that, the central bank is likely to keep its policy rate on a high level to prevent inflation, and as a consequence, the real sector could face high rates on loans.
Obviously, everything in Ukraine is very far from normal now, but when this conflict ends, and we all hope that it's soon, how long do you think it will be until Ukraine is able to resume that path that it was on to becoming a stable, low inflation economy? And what sort of support does it need from the international community if it's to do that?
The economic outlook for Ukraine contains huge uncertainties and will largely be determined by the length and scale of the war. I don't expect a quick recovery. Economic recovery can be a very time-consuming process, and there will be definitely the need for substantial external funding to help reconstruct the economy after the war. Potentially, the IMF support will be very helpful. It could unlock further external funding for Ukraine, while the IMF macroeconomic program could ensure consistent development of the economy without generating macroeconomic imbalances. And I keep positive, and I believe that policymakers will find a delicate trade-off between the need to support the economy and prevent inflation pressure.
Our best wishes to you and your family, and thank you, Yevgeny, for talking about this today.
Thank you, Tim.
The article is called War in Ukraine, the Financial Defense, and it was published on Vox EU on the 17th of March 2022. The authors Yevgeny Stock and Oliver Dugorod. This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. Every week we bring you the most important latest research. So if you want to know what you're going to be reading in journals 18 months from now, listen to Vox Talk's Economics Today. And when you subscribe, you'll find, well, there's more than 200 episodes now. So whatever type of economics you like, there is a Vox Talk waiting for you.